the tyrant, the divided god, the golden ruler, the worm. Titles percolating throughout history, all attributed to one being. A juggernaut, unbound by time's constraints, with eyes that pierce the future's furthest veils, and a force unto its own, that alters reality to its whim. This is the story of Leto II Atreides, better known as the God Emperor of Dune, whose 3,500-year tyranny is warped by myth, where truth and lies meld into a complex individual who transcends humankind and is altogether something unique, terrible. Leto is born in the years following the Arrakis Revolt and fall of House Carino to the new Emperor Paul Muad'Dib Atreides and his Fremen concubine Jonny Kynes, one of a pair of twins alongside his sister Ghanima. From the first moments, Leto's life is marked by greatness. He's a preborn, an individual whose consciousness is awakened while still in the womb and whose annals of past lives and other memories are impressed upon them, in much the same way as a Bene Gesserit reverend mother, but with access to both male and female halves. Superstition surrounds preborns, children who speak in tongues, rail on events of ages long past, and see with an unsettling wisdom that contradicts their physical appearance. They are abominations to the Bene Gesserit and inspire fear in others. Leto's abilities are caused by his mother's great consumption of spice before his birth, as the drug unlocks his genetic memory. Leto is also endowed with prescient vision. Prescience, or future sight, is a trait strong in the bloodline of House Atreides. His father Paul used it to secure his position on the imperial throne. But prescient individuals are themselves obscured from others with future sight, so Leto's birth comes as a great surprise to Muad'Dib. Infancy is unkind to the royal heirs. Shortly, both parents are lost, Jonny in childbirth complications, and Paul voluntarily to the dangerous sands of Arrakis, or so we're led to believe. Imperial power is then transferred to Muad'Dib's sister, Alia Atreides, and a regency council established until the young twins come of age. Here, threats swirl around court as various factions work intrigue for influence over the children, and plots hatched by deposed House Carino to assassinate Leto and Ghanima outright. But possessed of the memories of all who have come before, and able to predict future events, Leto isn't powerless to the forces that conspire. The twins are overlooked by their aunt in their early years. Alia, a preborn herself, succumbs to power's allure and allows the ego memory of deceased Baron Vladimir Harkonnen to possess her. She becomes Abomination, a cautionary tale for Leto, who himself struggles constantly against the past lives, screaming in his psyche, intent on dominating him. The twins practice to control themselves and their emotions. Out of fear, they refuse to open themselves to other memories. Around the end of their first decade, however, Leto's other memories seethe within, and his prescient abilities blossom. In the twins' conversation about Leto's prescience, we hear the risk of confronting past lives unprepared, and the terror both he and Ghanima feel. She didn't respond, didn't demand that he share more of his prescient dreams with her, and she knew how much this told him of her terror. That way led to Abomination, and they both knew it. But they can't delay much longer, and so decide to confront the inner assault of their ego memories. An understanding shared with him by his father Paul's presence allows Leto to retain control of his consciousness and avoid Abomination. This control is indispensable to fully navigate the encroaching prescient dreams. Shortly after, in a great trance, Leto has a vision that grips him entirely and becomes his life's purpose, for which he is remembered into the far future. It's a vision of the Golden Path, a narrow trail of events that humanity must be guided down. A step away from it means extinction of the race. The Golden Path is a tightrope of hope and promised salvation. He describes his dream to Ghanima. "I am on sand in bright yellow daylight, yet there is no sun. Then I realize that I am the sun. My light shines out as a golden path. When I realize this, I move out of myself. Leto suspects his father Paul uncovered the golden path but was either blinded to its necessity or else refused to follow it. He took his first steps but was overwhelmed. Leto determines he must lift Paul's fallen crook as humanity's shepherd, an act that requires great sacrifice and atrocity. This we hear in conversation between Paul, disguised as a blind mystic known simply as the Preacher, and his son. "I cannot lie to you any more than I could lie to myself," Paul said. "I know this. Every man should have such an auditor. I will only ask this one thing. Is the typhoon struggle necessary? It's that, or humans will be extinguished." Paul heard the truth in Leto's words, spoke in a low voice which acknowledged the greater breadth of his son's vision. "I did not see that among the choices." The Golden Path seeks to avoid Kralazek, the typhoon struggle at the end of the universe in which humanity will be tested and, if they fail, exterminated. The Golden Path is beyond any human. It requires meticulous stewardship of thousands of years, many lifetimes to realize in its entirety. It demands a comprehension available only to those of Leto's ability, but despite his mind's strength, his body will erode with time. A second vision visits the boy as answer to this problem, one in which he describes being wrapped in a skin that isn't his own, merging with a body that will sustain him, undergoing a ghastly transformation. "I realize then that my skin is encased in something, an armor which moves as my skin moves. I cannot see this armor, but I feel it. My terror leaves me then, for this armor gives me the strength of 10,000 men. Though it's precarious, it's the only solution." So, sidestepping intrigue and assassins, Leto journeys to the deep desert where he undergoes a spice agony that unlocks to him the complete golden path that supersaturates his being with melange and attracts hundreds of sandworm larvae called sand trout. In a mystical reaction, the sand trout merge their amorphous membranes with Leto's own skin. They meld with his organs, his muscles, his very cellular structure. A description follows. With a terrible singleness of concentration, he achieved the union of his new skin with his body, preventing rejection. No corner of his attention was left to dwell upon the terrifying consequences of what he did here. Only the necessities of his transvision mattered. Only the golden path could come from this ordeal. In this way, he initiates a centuries-long metamorphosis that will culminate in Leto becoming a human sandworm hybrid, a terrifying god. Immediately, however, the transformation lends superhuman speed, strength, and resilience to young Leto. The sand trout exoskeleton allows him to fly through the desert, a great specter that destroys camps and unites various remote Fremen bands. With sufficient strength gathered, Leto openly confronts his aunt Alia and makes a play for the imperial throne. The climax of his childhood comes when Paul, as the Preacher, is slain, when Alia asserts her own ego to expel Baron Harkonnen's presence and commits suicide, and when he, no longer opposed, ascends to the Lion Throne of House Atreides. Crowned as emperor, Leto marries his sister Ganima to ensure their hegemony. He uses Fremen and Sardaukar legions to assert imperial right. He claims godlike status within the religion established by his father's actions, and surrounds himself with only those loyal to his cause. Within his own consciousness, however, exist hundreds to thousands of ego memories from his genetic past, all still vying for primacy. Leto's mind is a seething torrent. To maintain control, he bargains with a powerful ego personality of ancient Earth, a leader of humanity named Harem. Leto describes Harem as dark, cruel, and autocratic. His evil was necessary for what Harem created, an empire that lasted 3,000 years in which the human species achieved greatness and in which survival became a habit. They were resilient against life's vagaries. Harem's example embodies the notion that ends justify means. His wisdom and preeminence within Leto's psyche greatly shape the Emperor's own vision for his golden path. He will rule in the model of the pharaohs. He will become a god and an oppressor. That is what the golden path necessitates. So begins Leto's reign, which will be known as the God Emperor's Tyranny. Years pass. Leto rules with an iron fist. The sand trout transformation steadily progresses. Eventually, his old guard, his advisors, even his beloved sister Ganima, die while he remains. He has seen the golden path. He knows what it requires, and he works single-mindedly to realize it. Three prime directives steer his actions. Condition the unconscious of the entire species to desire expansion. Inoculate future generations against submission to tyranny by restricting them with severe authoritarianism. Blind humanity from prescient vision and free them from the Oracle. These together will ensure humanity's survival against any existential threat. But to enact them, he must himself survive generations. As he ages, Leto's body metamorphoses into that of a sandworm, and he becomes a near-immortal being. Any semblance of man withers. He spared only his face and shrunken vestigial appendages. This mirrors Leto's internal transformation as he relinquishes any sentiment of humanity to fully embrace his inhuman charge. He becomes an unmoving, omnipotent force of nature. The golden path next demands extreme and prolonged despotism. It doesn't permit chance. To secure draconian rule, Leto spreads religious dogma. Worship and indoctrination crush radical thought, and the myth of the God Emperor grows throughout the centuries. He becomes a personification of religion. He develops a new, all-female military known as the Fish Speakers. Women, the God Emperor realizes, are less prone to violence in absence of external threats, and they engender docile servitude in the populations over which they rule. The Fish Speakers silence his detractors and prevent further rebellion. For reasons known only to himself, Leto also requisitions the constant supply of Duncan Idaho-type golas from the Bene Tlelax, the honorable swordmaster and servant of House Atreides, to act as Fish Speaker commander. The Duncan clones offer a familiarity that comforts the ego memory of Paul and the old Duke living in Leto. He uses the Duncans as a test for severity of rule. The morally righteous nature of Idaho's lead to loathing, then outright rebellion against the worm before they are replaced. This cycle continues for many iterations, and Leto survives countless Idaho assassination attempts, confirming that he indeed advances the path. The greatest initial adversary to his golden path is found in the school of Mentats. They represent an unknown variable, beings whose mental capacities allow them insight and independent thought. Thinking and cleverness undermine the God Emperor and cannot go unpunished. An imperial decree bans Mentat schools, and Fish Speaker legions are deployed to neutralize their bastions. The Worm next assaults the Empire's shadow factions and power brokers by destroying the one resource to which they are hopelessly bound, spice. Leto, as Fremen god, brings about their dream of a lush, water-filled Arrakis. He transforms the desert into a land of bounty. This solidifies his messianic figure and also kills off the sandworms for whom water is poison. Sandworms are integral to the spice cycle, and when they disappear, so too does the melange. The last worm exists in Leto himself, and all the Empire's stored spice is hoarded within his vaults. Spice dependence brings the Guild and the Bene Gesserit to their knees. They rely on Leto's benevolence for their continued survival. It takes them thousands of years to realize, but what Leto creates for the future is a species no longer chained to melange. All of the God Emperor's actions usher Leto's peace. A period of ignorance, complacency, and curbed aggression brought about by strict control of space travel and preference towards slow, planet-bound societies. described in conversation between Siona Atreides and Agola of Duncan, Idaho. This is the shape of the Worm's empire. What's wrong with it? Nothing, if that's all you want. You're saying that this is all he allows? This? A few market cities? On? I'm told even planetary capitals are just big villages. Leto's peace creates a reality where human progress is stymied, where all aspects of society are controlled and the fiery essence of the race is curtailed. An illustration of the God Emperor's ruthlessness comes in the burning of the Nine Historians some 2,000 years into his rule. These individuals, according to Leto, bastardized truth and distorted the past. Their falsehoods enraged the Emperor. They acted out of vanity. They represented deviant thought and threatened widespread opposition. He summarily had them gathered and burned alive atop the fires of their own works. We have only Leto's word against theirs. It could be that the Nine spread truth among Leto's fabricated reality. Their wayward thinking was tantamount to revolution and went against Leto's oral history. We won't know whose words ring the truest, but the God Emperor's certainly ring loudest. Leto's rule is a great, deliberate pressure on the Imperium that without a release valve will explode and shudder across the cosmos. Precisely what he intends. The cruelty of the God Emperor's reign impresses deep in humanity's subconscious a desire for change, an urge to break free from the cage Leto fashioned, and it's this momentum that is necessary for the Golden Path. Leto must perform one final act to safeguard humanity before he can relinquish his power. He must break the prison of prescience. The power of the Oracle is a constraint on humanity. It limits them, binds them to inevitability, which ultimately leads to extinction. To avoid this, Leto injects uncertainty. He manipulates genetic lines to create a mutation that grants invisibility to prescience. The God Emperor works with wild Atreides bloodlines over centuries. The morality inherent to Atreides breeds individuals that lash out against Leto's tyranny. But when he inevitably tests them with visions of his golden path, as well as the myriad atrocities or extinctions it prevents, the rebellions collapse. They admit his evil, but deem it necessary. The genetic program culminates in the birth of Siona Atreides, one who is invisible to the Oracle. Siona represents humanity unleashed, genetic immunity to prescient detection. This is integral to combat the existential threat building at the periphery of the Empire. Leto takes Siona deep into the Sarir, the last desert of Arrakis, and shows her haunting visions of the future he wishes to avoid. In these visions, machines, presumably created by the fabricators of the planet Ix, but possibly from an outside threat, are guided by oracular sight as hunter-seekers to exterminate humanity. Unthinking and unstoppable, humankind can't hide from their future sight, and the species is slain. The means for humanity to escape this fate rests in Siona's genes. Though she relents to the God Emperor, she still harbors rebellious notions against the despot and has been bred by Leto to seek his destruction. Siona's birth and her realization signal to the God Emperor that he has achieved his intentions. His existence is no longer required. Siona eventually wins a Duncan Gola to her cause, and the two plot the God Emperor's assassination. This coincides with an attempt by the Ixians to poison Leto's mind, divert him from the golden path, and secure their independence. It comes in the form of Hui Nori, a genetically modified individual created by Ix and the Bene Tleilax. Hui is made to be irresistible to the God Emperor, conditioned to spark what little humanity remains in the Worm and tempt him from his path with human emotion. Her upbringing occurred entirely within a no chamber, which rendered her invisible to Leto's prescience. Nori proves effective. Despite her danger, the Emperor is unable to dismiss or kill her. Instead, so intoxicated and with what little love remains, he proposes marriage. Though this is precisely what the Ixians plotted, it surreptitiously aids Leto's own designs. The god emperor has survived countless threats to his person over millennia, his sandworm body largely protective, but his vision of the golden path sees him go no further. He knows he must die. By succumbing to Hui, by seemingly turning from the golden path and hastening his death, Leto actually secures its next step. An attack by Siona on his procession sends the god emperor plummeting into a raging river. Water is toxic to the worm, and he shudders in fits. After a millennia-spanning rule, Leto II Atreides is slain. His final words to Siona go as follows. Do not fear the Ixians. They can make the machines, but they can no longer make Arafel. I know. I was there. This is in reference to her terrible vision in the Sarir. He assures Siona that through her descendants, humanity will prevail against oblivion. The tyrant, the god, the ruler of Dune is no more. But Leto lives on in legacy. With his demise, Leto's peace ruptures. A power vacuum destabilizes the entire empire. Its grand galactic borders are carved up by the many factions that now relish their freedom. The famine times ensue. A period of tumult, anguish, and need. Billions are slaughtered. Fear reigns. Leto's empire shatters. But out of this comes the race's brilliant hope. For generations, humankind both suffered under Leto's heel and depended upon him. Without the strict pressure he exerted, they were bidden to think for themselves, to dream and assert agency. Born from the desperation of the famine times, human activity bursts into a period of renewed discovery and colonization, known as the Scattering, in the centuries following the God Emperor's death. Megatrillions shoot into the great unknown, the seed of the species spread throughout untold systems. The Scattering injects what Leto saw as essential for survival. Genetic mixing, adversity, and uncertainty. It breaks humanity free from its binding chains. Leto creates a race over which no single entity will again dominate, and the God Emperor's actions are vindicated. After Leto fell to his death, the massive worm body dissolved into hundreds of sand trout larvae that began the long process of desertification to once more bring spice and sand to Arrakis. Though he is physically gone, pearls of Leto's consciousness remain in the sandworm spawned from his corpse, and he falls into what he describes as the endless dream. His oracular presence still influences and guides humanity along the golden path. Roughly 1500 years after his death, Arrakis is returned to inhospitable desert, now named Rakis, and under control of the Rakian priesthood. This religious organization reveres the prophet Muad'Dib and believes Leto to have been God. As such, they worship him as Shaitan, or the divided god whose thoughts lie within the sandworms. Leto's legacy, however, has its detractors, most notably in the Bene Gesserit sisterhood, who struggled to maintain power in their way of life during his empire. They despise him as the tyrant, yet sift through the accounts and actions of his time, understanding a small part of the golden path and grudgingly granting credit to the gravity of his plans. As Reverend Mother Lucilla describes, she began to have a new appreciation of what the tyrant god emperor had actually achieved. Leto II had been no ordinary force of nature. He had been the biggest juggernaut in human history, rolling over everything. Over social systems, over natural and unnatural hatreds, over governmental forms, over rituals, over religions casual and religions intense. The crushing weight of the tyrant's passage had left nothing unmarked, not even the Bene Gesserit. Leto had called it the Golden Path. He dominated the hearts and minds of trillions for thousands of years, forced his own thinking onto them, engendered a cult-like mythos from which 1500 years later, humans are still trying to untangle themselves. To Leto's consternation, however, the power factions remain inflexible. The Bene Gesserit especially retain their short-sightedness and self-interest. A young girl, Shiana Brug, appears on Rakkis with a unique ability to communicate and control the sandworms. She speaks directly to the pearls of Leto's consciousness. The Sisterhood wishes to use her and the religious momentum she represents to achieve preeminence in this new universe. With a girl at their disposal, the Bene Gesserit can seed worlds with worms and their religion. What we have is an empire still inextricably tied to the ideas of the past, of spice, the dogma of the God Emperor, and to the significance of Rakkis. Of course, Leto saw this future and left one final message hidden within ancient Siege Tabor and discovered by the Bene Gesserit sister, Darwi Odrade. Leto's message is a scathing admonishment of the Order. He blames them for creating him from their blindness. It's also a dire call to action that stirs heretical sentiment within Odrade, forces her to reconsider the Sisterhood's aims and discover what he calls a noble purpose. The Mother Superior of the Sisterhood, Taraza, realized this too, as well as the tyrant's continued influence, and so hatched a scheme. When the Lost Ones return from the scattering, a warped version of the Bene Gesserit appears in the Honored Matres, who intend on conquering all civilization. Taraza goads the Matres into destroying Rakkis for two reasons: to unite those who view Leto as the divided god against the Matres, and to destroy all of the sandworms that still hold Leto's consciousness. Darwi Odrade reveals as much in conversation with Duncan Idaho. "We were trapped too long in the tyrant's oracular maze. I thought you deserved an explanation of the Mother Superior's designs. It was aimed at the destruction of Rakkis, you see. They were an oracular force holding us in bondage. Those pearls of the tyrant's awareness magnified that hold. He didn't predict events. He created them." Though one worm escapes the destruction of Rakkis alongside Shiana, by the time it has matured and proliferated enough to exert an oracular influence, humanity will have already spread too far, with too many carrying the blood of Siona and invisibility to prescient vision. This is the final death of Leto Atreides, and with it, the Golden Path is secured in its entirety. Leto's story is intricate, with many interpretations. It's one of ultimate self-sacrifice. Every moment of his centuries-long reign is pain to him. It destroys his humanity and renders him hopelessly isolated. But outsiders looking on see none of this. They see only a tyrant and force of evil that nearly destroyed humanity. In truth, his terrible actions spared the species from extinction and brought about the path long envisioned. So ends the tale of Leto II Atreides, the God Emperor of Dune. Thanks so much for watching and listening. Let me know your own thoughts about Leto, the Golden Path, and his rule, as well as your own insights and suggestions for future videos in the comments below. And if you're a fan of lore and storytelling, be sure to subscribe to the channel, check out the podcast where content is uploaded frequently. I want to take a moment to thank my amazing supporters over on Patreon, who make all of this possible, and I couldn't do it without their fantastic support. If you'd like to become a lore luminary for access to me, a great community, written scripts, and early video drops, head to patreon.com/thelorebrarians to learn more. Until next time, go forth and explore the lore.